Thank you for joining us today on the Learner Podcast. I'm very pleased to welcome Ginger Garrett, the author of Name Tags and Other Sixth Grade Disasters from Carol Rhoda Books here at Learner, and The Last Monster from Delacorte Press. She lives in Atlanta with her family and Watson, her 27th rescue dog. Name Tags and Other Sixth Grade Disasters is just out this month and tells the story of Lizbeth Murphy, who always has a plan until now. She can't get rid of her dad's new girlfriend, Claire. And when she and her mom move, Lizbeth has to join a sixth grade class already in progress, where her teacher makes her wear a name tag, and she's seated with three notorious weirdos. When faced with mandatory participation in a school talent show, Lizbeth and the weirdos decide to create self-portraits. Reluctantly, Lizbeth finds herself becoming friends with people she thought she had nothing in common with, and coming to terms with the things she can't control. Thank you for joining me today, Ginger.
Oh, thanks so much for making time to do this.
If you were to fill out a name tag right now, what would you write on it?
Probably quirky. That's my daughter's favorite word. And I love that. I love that she doesn't describe herself as sexy. That seems to be the big word right now in middle grade, at least among the middle school kids that I know.
Were you stuck with labels that you hated when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I remember one day getting on the bus, and I had this big French horn that I carried. I was a band geek, and I had a terrible overbite. My orthodontist said that it was the worst overbite he had ever treated. I couldn't close my mouth without my teeth sticking out. I look like Freddie Mercury with red hair and freckles. And I remember getting on the bus one day and the kids calling me monster and kicking me as I walked down the aisle. And that day always stayed with me. Just that was my nickname that they whispered behind my back was monster.
As you mentor kids, what have you noticed about the power of labels?
I have really encouraged the kids to always leave room on their name tag for something else. I know that particularly in middle school, they want to belong. It's really important for them to find a group and to find a label that fits. And, you know, I mentor a lot of kids through my library program. And what I tell them is, I understand that and I honor that, but leave room on your label because you are so much more than just one thing and you're going to grow and change so much. Just give yourself plenty of wiggle room in that white space.
That is such a good message for these times.
Yeah. Yeah. Kids just, they need to belong and they need to have that comfort of knowing that somebody sees them. And, you know, really, if you think the research is telling us that 1,000 selfies are loaded every 10 seconds on Instagram, we're really priming kids to see themselves only as a commercial product. Middle grade fiction is the most powerful medium going right now because it's the only way I know to change how kids see themselves. We're priming these kids to put themselves out there so that other people tell them what to write on their label. Middle grade fiction kind of gives them that space in their mind and spirit to think about, who am I really? And I love writing for kids for that exact reason.
What was your inspiration for this particular book for this audience?
Oh, it started in the craziest place. I was in a women's prison in Thailand. I had been on a trip. We had been working to fight human trafficking. And as we were leaving the country, we stopped at a women's prison and we wanted to encourage these really young women that had been imprisoned. And it's very political, but we felt like they had been sentenced. Well, we were not happy with why they were there. They were caught in that human trafficking, kind of conundrum of jailing some of the wrong people. And we wanted to give them the encouragement that we saw them and we knew and we were fighting for them. But there's obviously a huge language barrier. I only knew three words in Thai, and I know I got them both or all three of them wrong. So we wanted to communicate to them that they were more than the labels that they had been stuck with. So one of our volunteers had this idea that she put on a really heavy coat and we slapped these name tags all over her. And we wrote on the name tags. Each tag had a different awful name that women had been called in that culture. And as a song played, one by one, we tore those labels off. And even though there was this huge language barrier between the Thai women and our team, there was not a dry eye in the house. Every woman in that audience, they understood the message that they were not their labels. And ever since then, that day has stayed with me. And I've repeated that same exercise in Atlanta with homeless women and in schools. It's amazing to me that we all of us carry a label inside that we want to be free of.
Name Tags and Other Sixth Grade Disasters is coming out in September, and October is National Bullying Prevention Month. How would you suggest teachers, librarians, parents, or others who work with kids help the kids become aware of bullying and work to prevent it?
You know, bullying is such an issue that's tender to so many educators' hearts because they, you know, see day-to-day the effects of that. And especially as we're moving to online schooling more and more, the bullying is becoming more insidious in that we don't see it because it's happening online in ways that we don't get to see. And when it's happening in the classroom, we can kind of keep eyes on it a little bit better. What I would just want to encourage is that if we can continue just to feed into the lives of our kids and let them know that we see them, continue to surround them with all kinds of books and messages, and just let them know that it does get better.
Art, and a special art teacher, plays such a redemptive role in this story. Are you an artist yourself?
I am not. I really don't have any artistic talent, but my mom and my grandmother both are artists, and my grandmother in particular was a beautiful oil painter. She wanted to go to school. They were in rural Oklahoma, and of course that was back in the 30s and 40s, and they didn't have the money. She ended up going to work in an airplane factory in World War II, building airplanes for America, and that's how she spent really a significant part of her youth, and I have a lot of her paintings around my house. So I think of her, I think of how she traded some of her dreams in order for her family to have a better life. And I hope I honor her.
What is the most surprising thing you discovered while researching or writing the book?
I don't think I realized how many selfies our kids were doing. I have two teenage daughters and one just got out of middle school. And of course, I know that they're taking selfies, but it wasn't until I began doing the research. 1,000 selfies every 10 seconds loaded on Instagram. And I know that figure is actually much higher now. That statistic is probably about 3 years old. Research says our girls will take at least 25,000 selfies in their lifetime. It's just a staggering number of selfies. And just the fact that girls are learning to see themselves as an image, and they're learning to manipulate that image. I saw my daughter working on one of her pictures, playing with a filter to change how tall she looked or what her skin looked like. And I think that we just need to come back to the basics of affirming who we are and how we're made.
Related to selfies, you had sent us a note about the Google Classroom collection of selfies. So we'll include a note to that on the show notes page for all the listeners. You can go to learnerbooks.blog/podcast and find that there. Shifting gears a little, in addition to being an author, you are a writing mentor for middle and high school students through your local library. Can you talk about how to start a young authors club at your school library based on your program in Georgia?
Yes, and it is absolutely my favorite thing on the planet to do. And I'm so blessed that I work with the Forsyth County Library here in Georgia. And what we've done is really concentrate on creating the library to be a space that kids want to come and hang out in. And what we do is just sort of have an open platform where every month and every few weeks, kids can bring anything they're working on, and myself or another adult is present. We have a big room we set aside. I always bring food. If you bring food, kids will come. And anyone can take turns. They read what they're working on, and the other kids give feedback. And of course, I structure the feedback so the kids understand constructive feedback isn't saying, I didn't like it. Constructive feedback is asking questions. You can always give a compliment, but when you ask questions, you dig into the piece, you get to know the other person a little bit better. And this program has thrived. We've been running now, I started in a public school. We have transferred to the library. We've been running 5 to 6 years now. And in the summer, we do big intensive workshops. Here's the key though. When I first started, I was terrified because I thought I had to teach, or I had to somehow, you know, give them something of great value. What I quickly realized, though, is these kids just want somebody to listen. In fact, I found this amazing piece of research that when kids find an adult who listens unconditionally to them, they interpret that almost as if it's the same feeling as being loved unconditionally. They crave it the same way they crave unconditional love. There's just not enough people in the kid universe who just listen unconditionally to them. So if you want to start this program, don't feel like you have to have any writing experience or anything like that. Just be someone who's willing to listen.
And it sounds like aside from the food, the majority of that program is absolutely transferable to an online experience.
Yes. In fact, I will be starting this year in the fall with Calculus Roundtable. It is a nonprofit organization that targets underserved kids, particularly students of color, in STEM programs. We partner with NASA and MIT, bringing STEM programs into particularly inner city schools. What's exciting is I'm going to get to teach creative writing so that every week these kids have a chance to explore their artistic side. And Calculus Roundtable is launching a national broadcast channel so that schools anywhere across the country at no charge we'll be able to link up once a week with any of our partners and attend an online class. Their kids can participate in water experiments with the NASA team. They can ask questions of MIT people. They can have their work read and get feedback if they want to do creative writing. We're so excited about this platform that's getting rolled out.
That sounds like a fabulous project, and we will be sure to include a link to that on the show notes page as well.
Great.
Well, thank you very much, Ginger. This has been a really interesting conversation about how kids and their experience with modern technology through selfies can be a mechanism to connect with them and to help them realize that they are more than what any one person may think of them. I love your approach here that you're, you know, leave room on your name tag. You're more than your label. I think those are great messages to send to middle and high schoolers today as they go through their lives.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for helping me partner to get this book out there. I'm so excited about it.
We are too. Thank you for listening to the Learner Podcast. Tune in again next time for more author interviews and the stories behind the books.